Homajnanatimadannasyajnananjanashalakaya chakshurunmuditam dhena tasmai shri gurave namah.
Welcome to ISKCON of Silicon Valley, and thank you for braving the weather to come here. We apologize for the rain. It's our relentless yajna that we're performing here. This being the beginning of the year has been pleasantly crowded with meetings during which we are looking into the lessons of last year and looking towards making improvements in the next year. Do you all feel like this is a good time of year for doing that? It seems natural. Everyone all over the world seems to find some relief in the fact that there's a demarcation between one year and the next. And the Vedic system really is divided into periods of time during which we use our energies and place our focus in certain ways that are most beneficial. For instance, in growing up, it's natural to study. So there's brahmacharya. And it's natural after 20 years, 25 years, to go into family life and into commerce and other kinds of industrious activities. And then, of course, after 50 or so, it's natural to start to wind things down, and then near the end of life, one gives as much energy as possible towards spiritual life. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj said, Kumara acharit pragno dharman bhagavatam miha durabha manasam janma tarap yudruv martadam, that one should start from the early age of childhood to dedicate one's life. Nonetheless, everyone needs to have some idea of how to use their energy properly during the day, during the month, during the year. So it's been a good time for everyone to talk about these things. One topic that I'm finding wherever I go to be universally interesting is that we're not our body. And it's something that people often don't think about. And this is one of the main points Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita from the outset. The first time I read the Bhagavad Gita, I was relieved when Krishna started describing to Arjuna the difference between the body and the soul. And he said that the soul is perpetual, whereas the body is constantly changing. And that the body is like a dress. It just covers us for some time, and then we discard it. When it wears out, we move on to another body. However, most people, being absorbed in what we call the bodily concept of life, in which Krishna describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam as being the mentality of a lower species, like an animal, who's absorbed in the bodily conception of life, with no possibility of taking an objective view and seeing the difference between the body and the self. But humans can actually observe and see that I'm different from my body. So this, Krishna says, is the real essence of knowledge. This is in the 13th chapter. Krishna says, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetrishu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayor jnanam yattach jnanam atam mama, that I consider knowledge to be the ability to see the difference between the field, which he's saying is the body, and the knower of the field. And he describes in the Bhagavad Gita that the greater elements that we see within the universe are also part of the field. There are gross elements like earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, and their interactions. They're part of the Jada, or the dead material world. However, the soul isn't dead, it's actually eternally conscious. And it's, according to Krishna in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what actually animates the universe. That's an amazing fact, that just by looking at things, we animate them. Because wherever we place our consciousness, that place becomes animated. He says, aparayamitastanyam prakritim vidini param. The living entity is within matter and is making it go. And how do we make it go? Merely by looking at it and desiring and moving about. So this is the first stage in spiritual life, to know the difference between the field and the knower of the field. And then Krishna goes on to say that there's also a super-knower. Prabhupada uses different terminologies to describe this super-knower. He calls the super-spirit and also the super-soul. These are words that those who have been reading Prabhupada's books for some time may take for granted, but they were carefully selected in describing the phenomena that is our existence, the material body, the soul, and the Supreme, who accompanies us always. He uses different nomenclature. So there's the spirit, he says, in the Bhagavatam, and it's also the super spirit. And one can become aware of the super spirit, he says, by taking help from the intelligence. Has anybody here ever taken help from their intelligence? One person, Mirakula. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If we actually take time to notice it, that we're taking help from our intelligence, this is one of the processes of self-realization. It's just that I don't notice it. So spiritual practice means to notice things. And Prabhupada comments in the Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, that even an ordinary person who takes a little time to become aware of the inner workings, for instance, that he or she is getting intelligence from a superior source, can become aware of the super spirit, and can also become aware that he or she is not the body. You can see that the body is separate. For instance, you can feel your arms, your legs, and you can observe for yourself how they're made of material elements. For instance, you can feel right now that if you move around and feel some of your limbs, that they're a little squishy. Did you ever notice that? You noticed? You might take it for granted and just think, oh, that's how my arm is, but what is it actually? It's made out of mostly water. It's got a membrane around the outside holding it all together, but just a little scratch and the water starts to come out because it's mixed with other things. This is an observation that one can make and see that I'm observing the field, I'm observing the body, but I'm not the body itself. And then becoming aware of the fact that Prabhupada says one is incompatible with matter. He says that there's an avenue, a door through frustration. Anybody ever feel frustrated? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This is a good thing because it indicates that I'm not part of the material energy. I'm more subtle energy than the material energy. That's why I feel frustrated with it. I'm a little out of place with the material energy. And if one notices that I'm observing how I'm becoming a little frustrated with the fact that matter is always falling apart, it's never quite in its right place, it doesn't live up to my expectations, This is also a form of introspection that leads to self-realization. Now, the intelligence is coming from Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in several places, that he's providing intelligence to the living entities. You tell me which verse. Are you one of the Gita champions? Who is? Give me a verse from the Gita. You can do. Think of a grain ceremony in which chapter we chant. Which is that? Okay, 15. Yes? 15 chapter, you are correct. And what's the verse? Sarvasya chaham ridisam nivishto mataksmitir jnanam apohanam cha. So these first two lines of 15:15, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that I'm in everyone's heart as the super soul or the super spirit, and I provide remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And this is because Krishna is very affectionate toward the soul. And he's fulfilling our desire. So if I desire to know him, then he gives intelligence by which I can come to him. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, he confirms this. For instance, in the 10th chapter of the Gita, the 10th verse, he says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami puti yogantam yenamam upayantite. This essentially means that if someone is sincere about trying to know me, then I give that person intelligence from within by which he can come to me. And similarly, Krishna says, if somebody wants to not know me or to forget me, then I also give that person the intelligence how to forget me. For instance, Krishna may give somebody a philosophy, the intelligence to concoct a philosophy which says that there's no God, and therefore I don't have to think about God. I can go on with my life and feel comfortable that there's nothing. There are many different kinds of philosophies. Well, Krishna says, these all come from me. So, if one understands what one is, it gives a great advantage in life. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called sambandha jnana. This means knowledge of one's relationship with Krishna. And also with the universe. How many people do you think ask the question, where did I come from? And really look into it. Approximately how many people in Silicon Valley? How many people are there in Silicon Valley? Shraddha, can you tell us? Sure, she got Google right here. And we'd like to know the percentage of people who actually sincerely ask the question, where did I come from? And where am I going? How many? Okay, there's 3 million people. That's 2 million people more than in Bangalore, or Bangulu, or whatever they call it now. Bengalulu. And how many of them actually ask the question, where do I come from? 3 million? Three people out of 3 million? That's 0.001. Oh, the ISV congregation just skewed the whole thing. Okay, so an interesting phenomena about the practice of spiritual life is that the first statement of the Vedanta Sutra is a tato brahma jignasa, which means that we have not only full facility to inquire, but the implication is if you ask the question, then the answer is forthcoming. How did I get here? And what's the purpose of life? These questions are answerable in the human form of life. And the Srimad Bhagavatam says that that's the main purpose for the human life, is to actually ask the question. And therefore, Sita Goswami said, Kama Senendriya Pritya Rabu Jive Tiyavata Jiva Sitatva Jignasya Nato Yash Chiha Kanabi. That means it's okay to live your life in a healthy, balanced way, but only so that you can be strong enough to ask the question, what's the purpose of life? And if you ask that question, then the answer is forthcoming. Because, as Gajendra points out in his prayers to the Lord, Krishna is always waiting to give us the answers. And he's ready at every moment to fulfill our spiritual desires. And it's not that he's hesitant to give them to us, but he's simply reciprocating with our desire to know. So it's incumbent on us to actually ask the question. And when we become receptive to Krishna's answers, then we're known as spiritual practitioners. And the more receptive we become to Krishna's instructions inwardly and outwardly, the more we become aware of his hand in our life. More clocks coming in. Thank you. So Uddhava, when speaking to Krishna, said, who could repay you? He said, I'm so grateful to you, Krishna, because you manifest yourself in my life internally as the super soul and externally as the acharya. And it's simply to guide me back home, back to Godhead, to give me full intelligence and guidance how to come to you. He said that even if I had the lifespan of Brahma, I wouldn't be able to express my gratitude enough. So this feeling of gratitude to Krishna for supplying the intelligence how to come to him is the awakening of bhakti in one's heart. Actually, bhakti begins with gratitude. Gratitude means that I'm recognizing progressively that Krishna is helping me. It's not that he's just supplying intelligence, but he's also supplying the physical body, the platform on which I'm existing. He's the digestive power. He's the food that comes from seeds. He's the original source of all existences, he says. And the experience of one who's awakening to spiritual life is universal. And that is the experience of gratitude, of feeling how Krishna's hand is in my life in every aspect. In fact, I'm completely dependent on him. And this is one of the aspects of surrender that is mentioned by Rupa Goswami. Surrender we call sweet surrender because working hard to maintain the status quo in the material world is troublesome for me because I don't actually belong to the status quo in the material world. The Vedas say, asango khyayam purushaha, a living entity, you have nothing to do with the material world. You don't have to work so hard to keep up your material image. That takes a lot of work, doesn't it? I mean, just the hair and clothes and that kind of stuff takes a lot of work. Anxiety. Just how to maintain one's material persona. Growing up, going through school, there's so many social considerations. As an adult, there's so many family considerations. All these things are superfluous to our actual nature. It's very difficult. So when one's able to understand sambandha, or our actual relationship with Krishna, and my non-relationship with the material world, it's a relief. And there's a way to go deeper within that feeling of gratitude through the process of surrender called Sharanagati. So there's six items on the path of sharanagati, or surrender. The first is that one should accept those things that are favorable for one's practice of devotional service. And one can become more and more informed about these things by reading the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, and getting an idea of what the most favorable aspects, ways in which to organize one's life are, to be favorable to devotional service. There's a consolidated list, a short list of these things given in the Upadeshamrita by Rupa Goswami. He says, Utsaha nishchayad dharyat tat tat karma pravartanat sangha tyagat satovrete shadbir bhakti prasidyati. Shadbir bhakti prasidyati. He says these six items are favorable to devotional service. And they include, and begin with the list of six, with enthusiasm. Utsahan. Everyone say. But when you say it, be a little more enthusiastic. Utsahan means enthusiastic. And if you consider the word enthusiasm, you'll find that it goes back to Latin and means entheos, means the divinity within. Theos means God, and en means in. So entheos means an awareness of the divinity within oneself. This is real enthusiasm, being motivated by one's connection to the Supreme Soul, the Super Spirit within. Utsahan means not necessarily that you're overly animated all the time, but it's really displayed in an eagerness to stay engaged in service despite one's external circumstances. I've seen devotees who have this kind of utsahan, and in all the circumstances of their life, whether things are up or down, they continue with their service in whatever way they can contribute. This is very important because the world is full of changes, and unless one maintains this enthusiasm for service, then it's easy to become sidetracked by the various changes that go on in our life. And then after enthusiasm, utsahan nishchayat dharyat. Nishchayat means confidence. One should have confidence. So Prabhupada writes about this in the light of the Bhagavat. Do you have a copy by any chance? Is there one there? I would read you I think it's plate number 44, in which Prabhupada describes how one should have confidence in the practice of bhakti. You should be sure by studying the scriptures and hearing from spiritually advanced people that by performing the practices of devotional service, you'll definitely come to the perfectional stage. If you become sure about this, then you will remain confident. Even when you begin to practice bhakti, you may not experience perfection right away. Just as much as when you go to the doctor when you're sick, and the expert physician recommends a particular kind of medicine, you may not immediately experience improvement. However, if you've done your due diligence and you've found that this... Oh, by the way, we have these available here. I like that. Instead of bringing me one copy, he brings me like six because he wants everyone to have one. That's a ISV devotee there. I've had this experience. You go to a doctor, everyone's recommended. I got better going to the doctor, people tell me, and the doctor has great credentials and so forth. Therefore, I have confidence in taking the medicine that he or she prescribes. And in a similar way, if we understand the authorized source through which we're getting this information, that it's ultimately coming from Krishna, and that he has perfect knowledge and information, and the medicine that he's offering to us is fully potent, then we'll feel confident when we're practicing devotional service. And I promised to read you a short section from the light of the Bhagavad. How many of you have read this book? Don't worry, if you haven't, I won't make you buy it. But if your cell phone goes off, I will. This is from the 43rd plate in the light of the Bhagavad. And Prabhupada writes the following: devotional service to the Lord never goes in vain. Just at the right moment, the result of one's particular devotional service will come, even if one has no desire for it. Did you like that? Yes. Shall I read it again?
Yes.
Devotional service to the Lord never goes in vain. Just at the right moment, the result of one's particular devotional service will come, even if one has no desire for it. We find a similar phenomenon or instruction given in the Bhagavad Gita. This is from the 6th chapter, 44th verse. Krishna says to Arjuna, by virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically, that means the person who has practiced devotional service in a previous life and failed, although he's describing how there is no failure here, automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. Means there's a natural way in which one becomes attracted to devotional service because of one's previous practice. It means you don't lose the result of your devotional service at any time. It's always there for you. It has a cumulative effect, so you can never lose. It never goes in vain. And at the right time, it will manifest itself, even if you changed your mind in the meantime. Somehow or other, you're diverted, or you were taken on a long ride through the heavenly planets, and then you came back down again to Earth. You were born in some family where they called you some weird name, and kids teased you at school, and then you grew up, and then all of a sudden you remember your past practice, and you take shelter of the process of devotional service. This happens by the divine arrangement of the Lord because of your previous practice of devotional service. Yes?
I was going to say that one of the ways that remembrance comes is when the weekend warrior comes and knocks on your door.
When the weekend warrior comes? Yes, so someone may come and remind you that, hey, you're a devotee. And we see oftentimes when people suddenly become attracted to devotional service, even though they weren't before, this is one of the symptoms of somebody having practiced previously and then taking it up again. Continuing with light of the Bhagavad, Prabhupada says, the pure devotees do not wish any return from the Lord in exchange for their service. They do not make business exchanges with the Lord, but the Lord, out of his own accord, fulfills all the desires of the devotees. Further on in the purport, Prabhupada writes, a devotee, therefore, should execute his devotional service with full energy, endurance, and confidence. He should perform his scheduled duties, he should be pure in heart, and he should serve in association with devotees. All 6 of these items will lead the devotee to the path of success. Now, brace yourself for the next part, because it's very important. Are you ready? One should not be discouraged in the discharge of devotional service. Failures may not be detrimental. They may be the pillars of success. One must have good faith in the regulative principles followed by self-realized souls, and one should not be doubtful about the ultimate result of such devotional service. Rather, one must go on executing his prescribed duties without hesitation, and one should never be influenced by unwanted association. I have one more paragraph. Are you ready? We should not consider going back to Godhead a plaything. We must take it seriously as enjoined in the scripture. For a strict follower, the result is sure and certain, and when the time is right, the result will come of its own force. It will come of its own force. And actually, this particular verse that Prabhupada is describing is, he's talking about the autumn season, which is mating season. It just so happens once female is impregnated, the result, that is, that the there will be offspring, and that is assured. So in a similar way, once one's come in contact with the process of devotional service, Prabhupada's saying that you should be confident that the result will be there. Now, it doesn't mean then that we should neglect our practice and just hope that it fructifies at some time of its own accord. We can waylay the process by not surrendering or participating. We have a conscious choice to surrender. However, if we take up these attitudes, for instance, an enthusiastic attitude and also having an attitude of confidence, by having well-reasoned faith, if one studies the process of devotional service and understands how it works, then one will be very confident about practicing. And this is the second aspect that Rupa Goswami says is favorable for devotional service, to be confident. Utsaha nischayad dharyat means patience. So you have to wait until it's your turn. You have to wait until the medicine starts to take an effect, and don't start getting antsy. Depend on Krishna to know when's the right time for the effect of the process of devotional service to manifest in your life, and go on with your service, despite whatever shortcomings you may have now, and be confident that the right time will come. We notice in the life of Srila Prabhupada that he had this patience when he was spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. He started in India, and it really didn't work out very well. He started all by himself, and he had very little resources, and his first attempt at starting an international society, the League of Devotees, didn't work. In fact, the building that he was renting was taken back, and he was sort of pushed aside. They needed it for some other purpose, some insignificant purpose. They had no idea who they were dealing with. But Prabhupada didn't take it as a fatal blow. He simply looked for the next way to continue his service. And he commented that he had thought that he would be able to make a lot of money in order to fund his spreading of Krishna consciousness all over the world. That makes a lot of sense, that if you're going to come to a foreign country, you should at least come equipped with the capital to start things. But that, as it turned out, he didn't have anything when he came. Nonetheless, he had this confidence and patience and simply went on with the process. And he commented on his way to America that all I need really is the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Holy Name, because with these I will be able to effect change in people's hearts, and this can start the Krishna consciousness movement in the West. So he had confidence in the process, and he also had patience. He waited until people started to come and to help him. And that took a lot of waiting, because he landed in New York during the worst winter on record. And all he had was those pointy shoes that he got in Lohi Bazaar somewhere. And he had dhotis are not meant for New York. They're meant for Calcutta, which is, it's hot. But there he was in New York. So if you look at the way he performed his services, you will notice confidence and patience. And this is favorable for devotional service. This is presiduity. There are three more. Utsahan nischaya dharya. Tat tat karma means? Yes, following the activities related to devotional service. Tat tat karma pravartana, that means there are a variety of activities that you can do in devotional service. Shall we discuss what a few of them are? Okay, one of them is maintaining Tulsi. Tulsi Devi is so auspicious, says the Shastra, that simply by seeing her, simply by touching her, by collecting her flowers, or to speak of offering them at Krishna's lotus feet, then one becomes spiritually enlightened and awakened. This is one of the activities. Another one is taking charanamrita. In the pancharatrik system, the deity is bathed every day, and the water, which is mixed with sandalwood paste and rose water and so forth, and tulsi leaves, glides down the body of the Lord, and it is collected, and then one drinks some of that water. This is one of the activities of devotional service. Also, maintaining one's own home practice of chanting Hare Krishna, taking time out every day to repeat the Lord's name a set number of times. This is, comes under the category of tat tat karma pravartana, following the various practices of devotional service. And even if you pick a few of them in your life and make sure that you maintain them regularly, then you'll make steady advancement in devotional service. Sangha tyaga means you should give up unwanted association. That means people who think the material world and the pursuit of happiness here is a great idea. If you associate with people like that who are addicted to matter and the idea of making a permanent residence here, then you'll be affected adversely. Especially one should associate with devotees and avoid the association of those who are dedicated to the material world. That doesn't mean that you can't go to work. It just means don't open your heart and start thinking that they're heroes because they're getting ahead materially and that it's a great idea to stay in the material world. Then, Satovrite means following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So our process is really known as acharyopasanam, which means to worship the acharyas. In any discipline, there are major teachers. If you take physics or sociology or biology, you'll find that there are luminaries, those who have made great discoveries, documented them, and after which everyone else follows. We don't go back and do the same research they did. We simply accept as axiomatic whatever they've presented. So similarly, in the process of bhakti, there are the great luminaries who establish the moods and methods of devotional service. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find that the demigods, when they were praying to Krishna within the womb, noted that this is the way to cross the material ocean in the most effective way, and that is to follow in the footsteps of the mahats, or the great souls. Those who are considered great souls are noted in the Shastra. For instance, Bhishma Dev. Bhishma is there, Dhruva Maharaj is there, Bali Maharaj is there. They're luminaries in the process of devotional service. And we have acharyas, the notable teachers who have left behind them a wealth of literature and have also set the example of how to conduct oneself in devotional service. For us, we have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of our greatest acharyas. Although he was Krishna himself, he was performing what is called acharya lila. That is, he was teaching by example. Prabhupada mentions that when a child first begins to write, an adult who knows how to write takes his or her hand and then makes the marks on the page and makes the letters. And one shouldn't then think, oh, the parent is also learning or the adult is also learning how to write. But actually, is teaching others how to write. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his life, showed everyone, by his example, how to conduct oneself in devotional service. And if we note the life and the methods of teaching Krishna consciousness and of practicing that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took himself, and follow that, we emulate that, then we'll be successful in devotional service. That's favorable. So there is no lack of knowledge of how to follow the process of devotional service. I've given just one small example that there is a process of surrender. If one has even the slightest inclination of wanting to bring oneself closer to God, then we have information about how to do that. I mentioned the sixfold process of surrender. The first out of the six items is that one should accept those things which are favorable. And then together we listed six items that are considered most favorable in the practice of devotional service, beginning with enthusiasm and being confident and being patient and performing the various activities of devotional service, avoiding bad association, and also following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. If you take just that amount of information that we've talked about so far and analyze it and see how to integrate it into your life, you'll find great direction. So in the beginning of the talk, I said that it's a preliminary stage of spiritual life to come to understand that I'm not the body. This is essential because oftentimes I'm simply carried away by the urges of the senses, and I'm unaware of the fact that I'm not this body, I'm actually something else. And then I talked about how we should become aware of the super spirit, or how Krishna is there present with us all the time. He's the closest one to us. He's the one supplying our intelligence. In fact, he's supplying our very life. And if one can become aware of his presence and then grateful for the way in which he's sustaining my life, this is the beginning of bhakti. Then, if feeling some gratitude, one wants to approach the Lord, then one may take up the process of surrender. And then we mentioned the first aspect of surrender and some of its subcategories. And that's just a tiny fraction of the information that is given by the teachings of the acharyas in our line, through which one can organize one's life to be successful in the practice of bhakti, bhakti yoga. Now we'll take a few reflections. That means anything that you heard so far that's stuck in your mind that you want to reflect back. Anything that you considered usable or that is a help in informing your life and your practice of bhakti. Shraddha.
I was really stuck with how devotional service will come to you at the right time, even if you don't have the desire for it. So it's nice to know that you might go wayward, but Krishna is still in the back thinking for your good, and he will come in at the right moment. Like that.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable that it manifests at the right time. Yes. This is something you have more, please.
No, Maharaj, after you say. After.
Just that in the Bhakti Sandarbha, there's a description of how this happens. And there was a man on his way to work, and there was a woman sweeping the path, and she called to her daughter and said, now's the time, because she obviously wanted to do something at a particular time. But this man who was walking down the street, who was fully absorbed in thoughts of conducting his business, heard this as a mantra. Now's the time. And he suddenly understood it, a body, mind, and spirit, that now I'm supposed to surrender to Krishna. And instead of going off to work, he made a U-turn and went back and began divesting himself of his work. In fact, he built a temple which is there in Vrindavan, the Lal Babu temple. It's mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. So this is an instance mentioned in the Shastra in which there's an accumulation of the practice of bhakti within the heart, and it manifests at a particular time. What was the second part?
The second part was how much we do. Yesterday you were talking about over-endeavoring for material things, and how much we spend our time and efforts and energy and everything in trying to get things, but a devotee doesn't have any business exchanges with the Lord and doesn't want anything, but the Lord gives it to him, even though, because he knows the subtle desire. So it's a totally different way of operating.
Yes.
Let go when it comes to you.
And it's a really good point. And as far as my interaction with the material world, Krishna mentions in the Gita, yadrichcha lava santushto, that one should be satisfied with gain that comes of its own accord. Again, it doesn't mean that you have to quit everything and lie by the side of the road like a python, although that is a method of realization mentioned in the Bhagavatam. But for normal people, as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, you can't even maintain your physical body without work. So it's reasonable that you perform some kind of work to maintain yourself, but the attitude should be yadrichcha labha santushto, be satisfied when gain comes of its own accord. Do your due diligence, and if it comes, be satisfied with that, but don't over-endeavor and feel great anxiety when it doesn't come. Feel satisfied that you just have some gainful work to do. Thank you. Other reflections? Yes, Prabhu.
I was just thinking when you said that there is no loss in devotional service, something to hope for then. And I was reminded of the verse, chapter 2, verse 40 in Bhagavad Gita, Neha Vikrama Nashusti Pratyavayana Vityate. Svalpapyadharmasya Trayatamavata Bhayata. There is no loss in devotional service, and any endeavor will lead to no material fear out of that. So just thinking on that. Thank you.
Yes, important to remember. Krishna mentions this early on in the Bhagavad Gita. Svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhaya. Everything's counted, even the smallest intention. And in fact, Lord Ramachandra says in the Ramayana that if one time one says, "My Lord, I surrender unto you," from that day forward, I become that person's protector. I never forget him after that. This is the kind of affection that Krishna has for every living entity. If one gives the tiniest bit of devotional service or shows inclination towards serving Krishna, Krishna is also known as Bhavagrahi Janardana. And this comes up in the story of Bali Maharaj, who was in the wrong place at the wrong time because he was born in a demoniac family, and then he got surrounded by demons, because that happens when you're born in a demoniac family. And then he got involved in a demoniac occupation, which is fighting with the demigods, and he won. And he took over everything in the universe. And then he was performing sacrifices in order to maintain his material opulence. And then came Upendra. Krishna came to take it all back from him. Bali had devotion in his heart, and the Lord knew that. But at the time that Upendra came to take away everything from Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj actually was inclined to surrender to Vamandev. And the Lord knew that. He could see it in his heart. Even though externally Bali was surrounded by demons, he was engaged in these sacrifices for material advancement, the Lord knew his heart. Therefore, he's known as Bhavagrahi Janardhan. And later on, it's mentioned in this pastime of Bali Maharaj that everyone was amazed at how much favor Krishna gave to Bali. And it is said that it was because he knew what was in his heart, his intention to surrender, even though he couldn't do it at the time, because he was in the middle of a sacrifice and he was surrounded by demoniac associates who would have been really shocked if he had suddenly surrendered. I mean, they were anyway when he agreed to give everything to Vamandev. But this is the Lord's perception. He knows what's in our heart. So even if it's that small, the intention is there. Krishna notices it. Yes.
New harmonium.
I like the point where you said that bhakti begins with gratitude, because gratitude leads to many things. Like, you can learn how to surrender. And then I know that gratitude, being grateful for what you have and for what Krishna has given you, it's a really good feeling. So it's really reassuring that you're always on the right track when you're feeling grateful.
Thank you for remembering that. It's practically, if you look into the idea of gratitude, ultimately it would lead back to being grateful to somebody doing something for you. Otherwise, if it was just a mechanical arrangement, who do you actually have gratitude for? There has to be some intention that someone extended himself towards you in order for you to actually feel gratitude. So in this way, gratitude actually leads one to a relationship with someone who is magnificent, who's actually supplying something to us. And this is something Shukadev Goswami points out at the beginning of the Bhagavatam. He says to Parikshit Maharaj, look around and see how nature is providing so much to us at every minute. Who thought of that? Who arranged that fruits would come from a tree and then they would have seeds inside? And who made the wrapper on an apple? It's in fact, nowadays there's a whole science called biomimicry, through which scientists observe particular phenomena in nature, like spider webs and the coverings on fruits, and they try to imitate it, because it's designed so perfectly that by imitating it even a little bit, they come up with a really nice product design. So who thought of that? This leads to a kind of confidence and communion with somebody, a force in the universe who's actually taking care of us and who has designed things in that way. Thank you. There was one more. Yes.
I thought of 2 points that strike me. One is the first 3 things that are out of the 6 things that are needed. One is utsaha, nishya, dhairya. And I was thinking of the second point. The 2 things that are most important is the holy name and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is what Prabhupada brought. So I was thinking sometimes, when I get distracted into the frills of other things that I do, which can seem like devotional service to me, but sometimes it's just my own false ego mixed with a few other things, and it's a nice thing to just come back to the basics of chanting the holy name and reading Bhagavatam, and then you feel like you're back into balance.
Yes, it's a great relief to know what the basics are and to take advantage of them. Always to start over. Don't consider that I'm advanced. Consider oneself a beginner. Start over every day and think, I need to go back to the basic roots. Why did I start this in the first place? I'm helpless, and I need to call out to Krishna. And this is important, because we talked about it yesterday, that it's possible after some time in practicing bhakti that one will get some kind of recognition. And duly so, because people do advance in bhakti, and they become amazing because of it. But then I might start taking that and thinking that, oh yeah, actually I am advanced. And when I start to think that, Queen Kunti says, then your practice of bhakti goes down. She says, Janmaishvarya shuta shibir edamana madapunan naivhar yavidatum vai tuma kinchana gocharam. Better you stay in the position that I don't have anything. I'm devoid of any advancement. I'm not anywhere. It doesn't mean that you act like that, but it means that you carry that feeling in your heart that I'm devoid of any qualification. Yes, Radha Kripa Prabhu. And then we have Mayapur Vihari. And then we have Surya Kun. Almost the Vishnu Sahasranam.
Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I like the point number six, the following the previous acharyas. I was just thinking, if even if we have all five, if we started, we have a lot of enthusiasm and we started with all the patients, but started, you know, creating your own word, own thinking, you know what, I understand, I want to love Krishna, if I don't chant, I can think about him, I can create my own word. So I think the number sixth one is the key to me, because it feels like I don't need to create anything of my own. I should understand my intelligence, which is not there. And then what has been already decided, and it is a proven and it works. So I think by following that, everything you get by default, so you don't need to create your own.
Excellent point. Really excellent. And while you were saying that, somehow an image came into my mind. I was thinking about enthusiasm. And someone sent me a link to a video, and it was a musical performance by an artist named Boy George. And he sings this song, Bow Down, Mr. Hari Ram, Hari Krishna, We Say Radhe Shyam. You know the song? You want to sing it, though? Anyway, I was watching it. I'd never seen that before. I heard the song before, but I'd never seen the live studio presentation. And Sachinandan Swami's there with a group of other devotees. And he was dancing for about 5 minutes, just with such enthusiasm. I got so enlivened just watching how enthusiastically he and the others were dancing, especially him. I realized how enthusiasm is contagious for devotional service, and just I got happy, you know, seeing he was like dancing to the song, and that my first impression was I should be doing that too. That's how powerful the enthusiasm is. It lifts both the practitioner, and it also lifts everybody around him or her to a higher level of practice of bhakti. So you should have enthusiasm. Who was next? Yes, Mayapur Bihari Prabhu. We have here at ISKCON Silicon Valley, it's like having a host of spiritual CEOs. Because when I see Mayapur Bihari, I remember how he co-founded the Motel Gita program. And now we had a meeting this morning with members from all over the world. And he was commanding the meeting like, you know, a CEO would do, arranging for the next period of growth in Motel Gita and so forth. So I was talking yesterday about spiritual portfolio. That's a spiritual portfolio. And coming in spiritual entrepreneurialism, taking risks for the sake of expanding the mission. That way you get noticed and you actually attain a spiritual stature by doing such things. Sorry, Mayapur, go ahead.
Thank you very much. You know, regarding the point of gratitude that we just discussed a few minutes ago, it's a wonderful point. Question, any tips, you know, if someone does not appreciate or have gratitude, I mean, having gratitude is such a relishable thing, but the lack of it, especially, you know, if it's someone who's your relative, preaching to a relative never works. Or, you know, so how do you actually try to inculcate gratitude or try to show them how he or she should be grateful for what they have received?
Well, for relatives, it's important to give love. Because that's really what they, of course, all living entities understand, appreciate love, but relatives especially do. And that's usually translated through giving some attention without any expectation. Because, as you already said yourself, you can't really preach to relatives unless they open themselves. And they may suddenly do that and really surprise you. And in which case, then, you should be judicious in giving instruction. Because especially to elders, they're very resistant by constitution to getting your instruction. Telling them they should do this or that. It just goes against their nature. So you have to be careful. But if you love them and give them attention and also bring them spiritual food, then that's a way to make friends with any living entity. If you feed them, then they like you. So be like that and be a good example. And at some point, if you're patient, they may open themselves up to you. And when I put my mother and father's ashes in the Jamuna, I also went out with, what's her name? Yeah, Samapriya. Her mom had already died, had died near the same time. So we went on in the boat together and committed the ashes all at once into the Jamuna. And she was telling her story about how when she was young, she had dedicated her life to the Krishna consciousness movement, and she had kind of neglected her parents because she was so absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness. And to that end, her relatives had become, especially one of her brothers, had become disturbed with her, thinking that you neglected our mom. But during the last 3 months of their mother's life, when she was in the throes of death, Samapriya came back and took care of her. And the brother and others didn't have the wherewithal to do that. And I've noticed this also, that oftentimes people who don't cultivate this knowledge that you're not your body, and they don't understand what death is, it becomes an extremely repulsive kind of a time to be around others. They don't want to see it. It's easier for them to be somewhere else when it happens and just ignore it. This is something Krishna mentions in the 8th chapter. Eighth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, where he says that those who have studied the science of Krishna consciousness, they know what's going on when somebody's leaving their body, and those who haven't, they become bewildered by it. What is the verse? Ukramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunam vitam vimuda manam pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusa. If someone has eyes of knowledge, they can see what's going on, and they know how to take care of people when they're leaving their body. But those vimuda, not a pashanti, those who are vimuda, they're very foolish because they think, oh, I'm my body. My mom, that she's her body also. And it's really difficult for them to deal with the passing. So they can't be there even. Or they don't know what to do when they are there. What do you do? If you're committed to ignoring death throughout your whole life and not thinking about it, then how do you help somebody else? So she took care of her mother at the time of death. And then the brother came back afterwards, after her mother had passed, and reconciled and said that actually, now I understand that we were meant to take care of her during life, and you were the only one qualified in our whole family to take care of her during her death. And so I bring that up to point out that there's the time comes when you dedicate yourself to Krishna consciousness and don't try to force the philosophy on your family, but at some point there will be an opening, and it will be a profound one also, and then you can help them in a certain way. I think Surya Kund Prabhu was next. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was on the gratitude again. I was thinking how merciful Krishna is, that whatever service or whatever devotional service we did in the past life, without even planning for that in this life, somehow we pick it up. Maybe we come across someone, or someone knocks at our door, and we start off. So being grateful to Krishna for preserving and letting us start from where we left.
How grateful is Krishna? We notice that he gave Putana liberation, not just ordinary liberation, but vimukti, which means he gave her an eternal position as an associate, one of his associates in the spiritual world, with a very intimate relationship. Why? Because she dressed up like his mother, even though she wanted to kill him. But Krishna accepted the part where she dressed it up like a mother and offered her breast, even though she had smeared it with poison. So Brahma, in the Bhagavatam, he says to Krishna, do you have anything left for anybody else? You gave so much to Putana. What about the residents of Vrindavan? How are you going to repay them? You already gave everything to her. But he says that the way to emphasize how merciful Krishna is. That if you would benedict Putana, who tried to kill him, what to speak of somebody who tries to do some sincere service? Even the smallest gesture towards Krishna, he accepts eternally. So why wouldn't somebody, Uddhava says, in reference to Putana, give their whole life to Krishna, surrender to him? Why surrender to somebody else? You can surrender to a boss, and at the end, especially when you're in the modern presidential administration, you'll just be fired. I mean, no judgment, but I'm just saying. And that can happen anywhere. And some people forget your service. They won't reward you or remember because they're not concerned. They don't have the capacity to do that. But Krishna is Bhuktanam Jagatapasam. He is the one who, if you sacrifice for, he knows what to do with it. He knows how to process your giving to him. So this is the impetus for devotional service. Come on. I think it's 10 after, is that true?
Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna Maharaj. I like the enthusiasm part of when you said that the enthusiasm actually brings the awareness of the divinity within. That kind of struck a chord with me. Like, I really like that part. And the eagerness to stay in service. So always looking for service, doing some seva. I really like that part a lot.
Yeah, that's a sign of enthusiasm that you like it. You know, and yes, it is something that there's a verse actually that says enthusiasm is auspicious wherever you find it. Yes.
Related to relatives, I was remembering how, you know, if we follow devotional practice seriously, the Lord is, he takes care of everybody. I was remembering like how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even the dog in Kulinagram, he said is his favorite just because they belong to the, you know, the land of devotees.
Yes.
So maybe if we follow the relatives, somehow we'll be blessed.
Yes, if you stay in the association of devotees, then you'll be counted as a devotee. And in fact, being a servant of the servant is more effective than trying to serve directly. In fact, if you're the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, a million times removed, Prabhupada said, this is liberation. And this is the great paradox of pure devotional service, that by becoming the servant of the servant of the servant millions of times removed, the experience becomes even more direct. And this Prabhupada mentions in the 18th chapter of the Gita in a purport, where he talks about how Sanjaya was able to observe what was happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra by the mercy of his spiritual master Vyasadeva. And so this mood of becoming the servant of the servant is extremely powerful, more than you can imagine, in the process of devotional service. Prikishori.
Hare Krishna. So in the car we were listening to the class, and you mentioned that the so-called the failures or the perceived failures in Krishna consciousness become a pillar to our success. And I was remembering the verse in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, apichetsu duracharya bhajate mam ananyabhag sadareva samantavya samyag vyavasita hisaha. And the purport Prabhupada says that in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may fall down repeatedly, but gradually as he becomes stronger, he will walk more steadily on the path. So that was something that, you know, I was able to correlate with. Thank you.
Yes, and we see throughout the Shastra, even a great stalwart devotees sometimes appear to make missteps, like Bharat Maharaj, who became distracted in his devotional service by a deer and fell down. And the acharyas give different ideas about why this happened. But one of them is that it was the Lord's impetus for him to fall down. Actually, you know, how from the position of bhava could he become so distracted by a little deer? Except for, says one acharya, that the Lord arranged it. And why did he arrange it? So his devotional service could become even more intense. Because sometimes after one's made a misstep and embarrassed oneself, I mean, how embarrassing is it that you have a king's body and then all of a sudden you get demoted to a deer's body? That's pretty embarrassing. I mean, you can forget the words to Sharir or Vijijal or when somebody, I was in L.A., I don't know, about 20 years ago, somebody pushed me forward, you know, lead Guru Puja, and it was a huge festival, and I started singing, and I forgot one of the lines. And I walked away and think, oh, my chanting's much better now. now that I revealed myself as a fool. And so when we do have a misstep, oftentimes it's a time when we become more able to call out to Krishna without any pretense. So it's not necessarily detrimental, Prabhupada says. It can become the pillar to success. We just have to take advantage of that. Pre Kishore, you got the last word then. And so we're counting down the minutes. We're going to have a reading of the scores that are being tabulated just now. And in fact, I was told, Shraddha told me that it would be at 4:30. Yeah, I know that, but then Malini came to the door and said 40, and I know why she said that. It's because they're still back there counting up. It's true. Yeah, down to the last minute, because it's not so easy. Hundreds of devotees go out for book distribution and have been doing so, well, not just the last 3 months. Devotees went out every single weekend this year. Didn't miss one weekend. We started, yeah. We started at ISV, the book distribution program, and it started with just a tiny little drip. And then we got a little more serious about it and started making some goals, remember? And in fact, I remember that we were so poor at the time, there was no money for Sankirtan, and we had to bootstrap our way up. In fact, we wanted to have a table inside the temple room, which took about, one table took up half the temple room to display books on, because we wanted to have a smart table inside where people could buy books off the table even if we weren't there. And I remember how it was a major consideration for us to be able to afford the table. And we had to go out and collect for it, sell a few books and get enough profit to buy the table. It was only about $100 or something like that. But that was a big deal for us. And slowly, by degrees, we increased the Sankirtan party. We used to have the monthly Sankirtan party once a month, as is indicated by the name. And when we first started, devotees were so ecstatic. After the first time, they said, let's do it every week. And I said, no, let's stick to once a month. And then after a few months, they said, let's do it every other month. I said, no, let's stick to once a month. And we finally caught our stride. And we're doing it once a month. But then it started to increase in various ways. And then we had monthly Sankirtan festivals, but we didn't really plan them because we were considering when to do them only sometimes a week ahead of time. And then after a couple of years, we decided let's plan them all on New Year's Day and which days we'd have the monthly Sankirtan festival. I'm just pointing out that things evolved, and one of the ways they evolved was through us thinking about it. Today we had a board meeting starting from early this morning up to this afternoon where we were discussing various ways to improve the ways that we're organizing ISV in different ways. And when any one of us does this, takes a little time to consider how to do things a little bit better. This is one of the aspects of improving one's life in devotional service and otherwise. Then gradually, by degrees, you can elevate yourself. This is something Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, it's intrinsic in every living entity to rise over time. And you just need to follow some of the basic examples and tenets given by the great teachers and the Shastras. So we look forward to increasing our effectiveness here at ISV in being hospitable to everybody here in Silicon Valley, to extending ourselves in warm ways to give gifts to everybody here, to re-spiritualizing what is already one of the most exceptional pools of talent in the world here at Silicon Valley. So everyone take heart in their own practice to incrementally improve, and also as a group, cooperating together and planning how to come to the next level. If we got this far, and we've come really, really far, we can go to the next level too. And now we have just a few minutes, like six and a half. So we're going to stand up now and move all the asanas out of the way and get ready for the offering. The way it will happen is we're going to stand on either side of Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasana, but we're going to leave a column open so that he can see the deities. And then Malini and SKP are going to come in. I'm not sure who's reading the offering, but they'll stand over on this side and read the offering. So if you can get everything in place in the next 2 minutes, then please take another 2 minutes to introduce yourself to somebody in this assembly that you've never met before. Can you take that challenge? Put all the asanas away, then introduce yourself, and then get ready for the offering. Mani Marka, set, go. Hare Krishna.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.